You're listening to an LA Kings podcast. For more episodes of this and every other Kings program, visit lakings.com/podcast.
Wild with it. King zone. Shot from there. Knocked down. And here's Williams on a break. And a penalty coming up against Minnesota. Here's Williams shooting. He scores!
You're listening to All the Kings Men, the official podcast of the LA Kings.
Against Carter. And Carter wins the draw and he gets it up to center. Here's Toffoli. Toffoli with some room. With Lucic. Toffoli. To Lucic.
Now, here's your host, Jesse Cohen.
Welcome back, Kings fans. I am Jesse Cohen. This is All the Kings Men, presented by Manscaped, an official partner of the LA Kings. Thanks to this revolutionary company, manscaping accidents are a thing of the past. Just get yourself the Manscaped Perfect Package 3.0. Inside, you'll find products like their Lawnmower 3.0, which is advanced skin-safe technology, so this trimmer won't cut you. Everything you need to keep trimmed and smelling nice is in the Perfect Package 3.0. You can get 20% off plus free shipping with the code KINGSMEN at manscaped.com. That's manscaped.com and use the code KINGSMEN. Rich Hammond and Lisa Dillman of The Athletic ranked the top six and worst six trades for the LA Kings in the salary cap era. We're going to break them down. Joining me now, Dave Joseph. How are you doing today, Dave?
I'm great, Jesse. Thanks for having me on. How are you doing?
I'm good. It's been way too long since we've chatted.
We're 8 months into the pandemic and we've barely spoken.
I know.
On this platform, at least.
I think the last time was when we were simulating those games at the end of the 2019-2020 season.
I think you're right. Yeah.
I was kicking myself today going like, man, I have NHL 21 and NHL 21 has a full schedule in it.
Yeah.
And we could have been simulating all those games on the, on the schedule, but
that's
too much work. Not worth it.
That is a lot of work.
Yeah. All right, well, we're going to start breaking down these trades. We're going to start with the good ones because I think the good ones are fairly self-explanatory and pretty easy to break down. But before we start, Dave, I want to establish our criteria because one of my biggest gripes about anything, whether it's judging a movie or, you know, art or hockey decisions or trades or whatever, is people forget in the moment what the decision was supposed to be. Like, if you and I are trying to get to McDonald's and we take a wrong turn and we wind up at a restaurant infinitely better than McDonald's, we still took a wrong turn, right? Like it all worked out.
Right. Yes.
But in the moment, it is not what we were attempting to do.
Right.
So that's what we're going to try and focus on.
Got it.
So we're going to start with the good. We're going to go in reverse order. Rich Hammond thought that this one was sort of controversial because of how the Mike Richards contract situation ended, but the sixth best trade in the salary cap era, which is really just a nice way of saying all of the Lombardi trades. But Mike Richards from the Philadelphia Flyers for Wayne Simmonds, Braden Schenn, and a second round pick. He has that as the sixth best. I wouldn't argue if you put it higher on the list, but I think it's pretty inarguable that that's a good trade regardless of how it turned out. At the end,
that's a very good trade. Any trade that nets you a Stanley Cup,
yeah,
is usually a pretty good trade.
Yeah, and you know, one of the things that I wonder about a lot is I'm not going to say that Lombardi got lucky. I will say that Lombardi was an opportunist, right? Like, it wasn't Lombardi's decision for Philadelphia to screw up and make Richards and Carter available,
but they did.
And
they were available for the taking.
That's right. And he took at least one of them. And then Columbus took the other. So, like, you know, I'm not going to give him 50% credit for that, but I'll give him full marks for doing it. And, you know, people have pointed out that Wayne Simmonds and Braden Schenn went on to have longer careers than Mike Richards did after the point of that trade. But as somebody on Twitter asked me, would I trade the two Stanley Cup wins for, you know, another crack at reality to see how it went with Simmonds and Schenn? I'll just take the wins. Thank you very much.
Yeah, I'll take the Stanley Cup. Sure.
Yeah,
I'll just take it. Both of them.
So number five, and I don't know that I would include this one. Number five is Alec Martinez, which was the number 95 pick in 2007 from the Washington Capitals for a fourth and sixth round pick. It worked out. Alec Martinez was great. But ultimately what you're talking about is the 95th overall pick for a fourth and sixth round pick. I don't care. Like, whatever.
Well, the good of that trade is that Alec Martinez scored two huge goals in LA Kings history. So that makes it stand out. Let me ask you this. Had Alec Martinez not scored the game winner in overtime against Chicago and the game winner in overtime against double overtime against the Rangers, would you feel the same way?
Well, I'll phrase it to a different way. If the Kings hadn't won the Stanley Cup in 2012 and 2014, do we ever even care or remember about this trade?
Probably not.
He'd just be another guy selected 95th overall. So
correct. Yes.
Like I said, agreed. Worked out. I worked out, but I still think it's cheating.
Yeah.
The next one is Matt Green and Jarrett Stoll from the Edmonton Oilers for Lubomir Vyshnovsky in 2008. And I just think this is a fantastic trade, no matter how you cut it.
It's one of the best trades in Kings history because it helped to lay the groundwork for the core of the team and for the leadership that was needed. It set the standard in terms of leadership in the locker room, who was going to lead, what was going to be acceptable, what was not going to be acceptable. And then it kind of got built out from there. That started it. That trade started it. So I agree with you there as well.
Yeah. And again, all of these are going to have the added icing on top of the Kings won the cup twice with the following with
right. Yeah.
Except for the next trade, Marian Gaborik, they only won one cup with the, or sorry, they only won the cup once with Marian Gaborik, but that is the third best trade according to the Athletic. Marian Gaborik from the Columbus Blue Jackets, essentially for nothing.
I mean, essentially, yeah.
Matt Fratton and second, third round draft picks, but for Marian Gaborik, like that was great. And Marian, he was great.
Marian Gaborik owned the playoffs when they won the cup, and he owned the Ducks.
Ducks
in Anaheim, and Gaborik scoring goals left and right. And man, what a playoff series that was. He was so good.
That trade goes into the same category in my mind as the Richards one does, which is, yeah, you'd like to replay how, you know, subsequent events played out, but the trade itself and the immediate returns. Yeah. That's a great trade.
Can't ask for much more than that.
Yeah. Now I thought about it a lot and I started looking up how many points all these guys scored in the playoffs and for the team. And I was thinking maybe this one should replace number one, but number two is Jeff Carter for the Columbus Blue Jackets for Jack Johnson and a first round pick. Obviously a fantastic trade.
Oh, but you're a Jack Johnson fan. I thought you would not.
Well,
you're kind of straddling the fence post here.
Well, I'll just tell you, the number one pick was Justin Williams for Patrick O'Sullivan in a second round pick. And the thing that made me think about swapping Carter for Williams was the fact that, and I know it's, you know, probably overstated on my part, but for me, Jack Johnson is just, while I feel bad for him personally, and I'm sure he's a lovely guy, to me, he has become, it's not even for me, like I see it all over social media and within the analytics community, he's just become the poster boy for what's wrong with how people analyze hockey talent. He should be a very good hockey player. He is not a very good hockey player.
I wouldn't say he's not a very good hockey player.
Well, I mean, this is where it all comes down to communication and how you define things, but the impact he has on his hockey team is negative.
I would agree with that statement. Yeah.
That's why I say he should be a good hockey player. He's fat, you know, I guess he's not as fast as he used to be, but he is physically gifted and capable of performing the independent skills required of one to be a good hockey player. But at the final bell, his impact is negative.
I also think he may struggle in the plus minus category
a bit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which a lot of people look negatively upon.
So, I mean, that's the magic of the Carter trade for me, is that not only did it upgrade the offense exponentially, but it upgraded
the defense.
Yeah, exactly.
But
Justin Williams did win the Conn Smythe in 2014, and, you know, he's great and everybody loves him wherever he goes. And he was a key contributor on that top line in 2012. So I think it's fair that Justin Williams gets the number one spot over Jeff Carter.
It's hard to argue Mr. Game 7 and the numbers he's put up in the playoffs. It would be hard to put him up. I mean, you could put him up against anybody and he would essentially win with the number of cup wins now and how big he is in big games and how he always shows up. It'd be tough to top that trade.
Yeah, and if you go back and look at it, Williams, Carter, and Gaborik, huge scoring numbers in the 2014 Cup run. Williams and Carter, two-time Cup winners with the Kings. All three of them, obviously, you know, they're not going to get their numbers retired, probably. But if there was some sort of secondary mechanism.
Like who's next on the list?
Well, if there was like a Ring of Honor, for example.
Oh, for sure.
I've been pushing for.
14 would be up there first.
Yeah, absolutely. And 77 would as well. Like 77, yeah, yeah. Jeff Carter's been incredible. So that's the good, again, not a ton of room to argue. They're all pretty great. There's a lot of minor trades that you can go back and look at and be like, oh, Brad Richardson for a whatever round pick. Like, that's great. Who cares about a fourth round pick? Or, you know, Colin Frazier for Ryan Smith. Ryan Smith was demanding a trade, wanted to leave. But ultimately, you know, those names are too big to ignore.
What about Jeff Cowan? You didn't throw in a Jeff Cowan reference.
Well, I think that was before the salary. I think.
Oh, okay.
I think
Trent Klatt was ineligible. Trent Klatt before the salary.
Trent Klatt was definitely before. Well, no, what year was Trent Klatt? That was 2006.
He might have been.
I really liked Trent Klatt.
I did too. He's a nice guy.
But I think that also might have been a free agency signing. That's the other thing is that this is just trades, not
free
transactions.
Agency. Yep.
And the reason I make that distinction is because I was looking back at the 2012 Cup winning roster. They had 11 players drafted, 12 if you want to include Bernier, but I don't because I'm just talking about guys that played in the playoffs. So you have Brown, Kopitar, Doughty, Lewis, Quick, Dwight King, Nolan, Martinez, Voinov, Clifford.
That's your guy. 74 is your guy.
That's right. Absolutely. And Loktionov, you had three unrestricted free agents, Scuderi, Mitchell, and Gagne. Eight trades, Richards, Carter, Penner, Richardson, Frazier, Green, Stoll, Williams. One, two, three, four, five of those guys wind up on the best five trades list. And like I said, Richardson and Frazier, I thought those were fine trades, but ultimately I think you could argue that you could win the cup without Richardson and Frazier, even though I would argue you couldn't. But anyway, that brings us to the picks for the worst trades. And we're going to go in reverse order.
Uh-oh. Okay.
And I think people are probably going to disagree with me on a lot of these, Dave, but I'm curious to know what you think. We're going to start with number six, which is Tobias Reeder and Scott Wedgwood from the Arizona Coyotes for Darcy Kemper in 2018. Now, this was a Rob Blake trade. This wasn't a Dean Lombardi trade. I don't think this belongs on the list.
Well, let me stop you there first and say, who's Scott Wedgwood? No, he was a goal.
Yeah, he's a backup goalie.
Right, but most people are going to say, who's Scott Wedgwood?
Sure.
And a good number of people may say, who's Tobias Reeder?
Yeah.
Even Kings fans, diehard Kings fans may say, who's Tobias Reeder? Because didn't do a lot while he was in an LA uniform. At least offensively producing, right?
Right. Mm-hmm.
So... yeah, it's hard to argue that. I mean, that's
well, here's why I don't think it belongs on the list.
Oh, okay.
Because we're looking at it from 2020, and we're looking at it as Darcy Kemper wound up being an incredible goalie for the Coyotes. But at the time, he was just another in a string of backup goalies for the Kings who wasn't going to re-sign with LA. He was going to be an unrestricted free agent, and Rob Blake told me to my face that the trade was partially, at least, a favor to Darcy Kemper to give him an opportunity to play for a club where he might get a chance to be the starter, right? He wasn't as good as he wound up being in Arizona when the Kings traded him. He was fine. He was a good backup, but so was Jonas Enroth. So was Eric Erzberg. So was Martin Jones. So was Ben Scrivens. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
And they weren't going to re-sign him, and they weren't going to get rid of Quick. So... whatever. Like, they got something back and they did the guy a favor and fine. Like, I just don't think
move
it's
on.
A bad trade.
Yeah, move on. Yeah.
Now the trade I would replace it with.
Okay.
Is when they traded a seventh round pick to the Ducks for, they got a seventh round pick back from the Ducks for J.S. Auban, another backup goalie that nobody remembers. Yeah. And the reason I added is because it was the first trade in history between the Kings and the Ducks. And what a trade. Like, who cares on both?
Right. If you're going to make a trade between the Kings and Ducks, it should be Teemu Selanne and Paul Kariya for Anze Kopitar or something, right?
Yeah. Yeah. So
that would happen, but
yeah, no, it's a nothing trade. It's a who cares on both sides. And I don't know why they did it. And for that to be like the trivia answer of who, you know, what was the first trade between the two teams? That's
J.S. Auban.
Yeah.
For
a seventh round pick.
Oh, so really, yeah.
Yeah,
really
nothing. I mean, literally nothing.
Like, nothing there.
Yeah. No offense to everybody who's been drafted in the seventh round. Fifth on the list, and I don't know, you and I may disagree with this one, but I think it does belong on the list, was Carl Hagelin from the Pittsburgh Penguins for Tanner Pearson, another Rob Blake trade in 2018.
Oof. tough to see Tanner Pearson go. I understand why it was done.
Mm-hmm.
Good to see him flourish in a new situation and then another new situation.
Yeah.
But a guy who was a guy, man, he got off to such a great start in LA and then it just kind of fizzled after that, right? It just didn't click for whatever reason.
Well, he had like an injury the year after they won the cup, I think, and he was on pace for, I don't know, 25 goals or something.
But always worked hard, always was the guy who would dig the puck out, would be the first one there to dig the puck out. Heart and soul guy, it just didn't work out.
For me, the reason I do think it belongs on the list, I get it. I think he had gone 17 games without a goal to start that season or something like that. Oof. And the team was right. That was they had made the playoffs the season prior and being swept by the Golden Knights. And that was the season the floor fell out. And at the point of that trade, I think there was a bit of a feeling of like, well, we need something to shake them up. Pearson hasn't scored in 17 games, so we'll make this move. But ultimately, you're trading a second liner for a third liner. Not long before they fired the coach, I think. Like, it might have been the week after. I don't actually remember.
And it wasn't like the player they traded for came in and made a big splash. Right.
And he was never gonna. I mean,
you're right, right, right.
This is not who he was. So I'm fine with that being on the list. Although in the moment, I sort of get it. which is what I'm going to be saying about two of the next four trades. Number four is another one I don't think belongs on the list, and I'll replace it with a different one in a second. And that is Ben Bishop from the Tampa Bay Lightning for Eric Chernak and Peter Budaj in 2017. I strongly disagree with this one being on the list.
Why?
If you'll remember, Jonathan Quick got hurt that year. And Peter Budaj was called in. And not only was Jonathan Quick hurt, but Jeff Zatkoff was hurt the next day in practice, or maybe 2 days later. So they went from having Quick and Zatkoff to having nobody. They called up Peter Budaj.
And he was awesome.
He was fine.
He was awesome.
He was fine. we tell ourselves he was awesome because Quick went down, Kopitar got hurt, they had zero offense, and so they just structured the entire season around desperate home plate stifling defense around Peter Budaj. But the reality is that was a stopgap. That was never going to be the future of the organization for a season or for seasons to come. And so Quick comes back, I think in February. I remember you and I doing a post-game episode where they waived Jeff Zatkoff, and I said what this means is that either A, Quick is coming back, or B, they're getting a different goalie, and it wound up being both. Quick came back and they traded Budaj for Ben Bishop. And look, we've seen it in the years subsequent or after the trade. Ben Bishop has been great, right? And Jonathan Quick at times has been great in 2018 against Vegas, right? He was fantastic. So they didn't know. My guess is the thought process was they didn't know how good Quick was going to be down the stretch. When they made the trade, there was an outside possibility that they could make a run for the playoffs. And at that point, I know I'm sort of trending positive, in hindsight, but at that point, they had only missed the playoffs once in however many years it had been, right? Since 2010, I think. And they're coming off a year where Quick and Kopitar both had injuries. So, yeah, you acquire Ben Bishop because maybe if Quick's not totally healthy, then you can ride Ben Bishop down the stretch.
Got a guy. Yeah.
Yeah, and he's still Ben Bishop. And the only reason it's on the list is because we look back on it and we go, oh, well, they didn't have a bunch of good defensemen and Eric Chernak wound up being a top four for Tampa. But that's, like I said at the beginning, that's like judging a wrong turn at the end of the destiny. Like, it wasn't a wrong turn at the time.
Right. He wasn't the player that he has become now.
He was like 20 years old or something, 19 years old.
Right.
They had Doughty, Martinez, Forbert, whoever, I don't even remember who was on the team anymore. They still had Muzzin.
Muzzin, a wealth of defensemen.
Yeah. They had three guys that you would think were going to be, and that's all you really need to care about. I mean, not really, but if you have three,
I see where you're coming from. Yeah.
So anyway, I don't think that one belongs, and I'm going to replace it with one that people are going to hate. And that's the Vincent LeCavalier trade.
Okay. Give it to me. Go ahead.
Well, I just never liked it. I didn't like Shen, and LeCavalier was literally at the end of his career. And when they made the trade, they were 25-12-2. They were third in the league in points percentage at 667 and first in Corsi 4 at 55.8. Now, they didn't have a huge drop off after the trade. Like, they didn't become a terrible team after the trade. But if you'll remember, they coasted the rest of that season into the playoffs and then got dummied by the Sharks. And you could just see it was like, oh, well, they haven't really played any meaningful games. They've just been sort of doing whatever. And, you know, I just,
so never, you're blaming that on Vincent LeCavalier?
No, I just don't think it was a particularly great trade. Now, they didn't give a ton up in the trade. It was Jordan Wheel, right, a third round pick. So,
and Jordan Wheel never really played here. Yeah, anyway.
I don't care about Jordan Wheel, and I don't care much about a 2016 third round pick. I just think it was one of those things where it had worked with Carter and Gabrick. And so it was like, oh, well, let's get another old guy who's never, you know, and it'll be great. It's, you know, and they tried it again with Aginla too. And it's like, no, it doesn't, you can't just bring in a dude. But right. I mean, LeCavalier was literally at the end of his career.
Well, I think they're hoping for like a Colorado situation with Ray Bourque, where they went out and got Ray Bourque and then Colorado won the cup, and it didn't pan out that way. But I think you kind of, that's what you're hoping for at heart, right?
No, but I just thought that trade, like I said, for me, it was just, they had gotten off to such a strong start. And every year at the trade deadline, when some team that's in first or second place drastically changes their roster, I always go like, why are you messing with something that works? And the answer is always, well, because it'll put us over the top. And it's like, show me a team where you've won putting us over the top. Usually the trades that work are like 2012-14 with the Kings, where you're struggling and you make that tweak that transforms the, you know, it's one subtle tweak that you wouldn't think is transformational. Adding LeCavalier and Shen, anyway, I didn't care for it. That's what I would replace it with. Next up, and this one is pretty simple and pretty self-explanatory. Third worst trade, Dan Cloutier from the Vancouver Canucks for second and third round picks. Dan Cloutier was never good, Dave.
You don't just mean in LA. You mean
that was a bad trade in the moment. Well, that was a trade where when it happened on the social media, wasn't really what it is now, but on message boards and where you could find Kings fans, the reaction was exactly what I just said, which is Dan Cloutier is not good. What are you doing?
I will correct you on one thing.
Yeah.
Dan Cloutier was good. And I only know that because I played against Dan Cloutier when we were in squirts.
Okay, and look, Dan, anybody Cloutier's who makes it to the NHL is good. I'm not trying to say he's a bum.
His team was really good, and his brother Sylvain was really, really good. So sure, he was good then.
But the justification, as I recall, when they made the trade was he had two or three seasons in a row of 30-win seasons.
Yep.
Playing for Vancouver, I think.
Yep.
But he came with the nickname Beach Ball. Right. Like there were already people making those images of him, you know, with a beach ball in the net and him like flailing at a save. Like,
right.
And it ended poorly, which I'm not factoring into the trade. But like there were a couple of moves that Lombardi made when he first came to the Kings that made me scratch my head. Like Dan Cloutier hiring Mark Crawford. He brought in a bunch of Kings villains and antagonists and none of them worked out. And you're just kind of like, all right.
Well, keep in mind at that time, there wasn't really a great record of Kings goaltenders. It wasn't
it was a terrible record.
Right. It wasn't like you were going back saying, oh, we got all these superstar goaltenders. We got to bring in another. It was like throwing a dart at a wall and saying, who's available? And let's take a chance with, Roman Čechmánek was a Kings goaltender for not a very long period of time. And that was, I think he came over in free agency from Philadelphia and it was the same thing. It was like, oh, here's the next guy here. And I remember saying at the time, but this guy, I hope he's good. And then it just never panned out. And it was the same thing with Cloutier where it just never, he was never that good.
Yeah, he wasn't.
And then Jonathan Quick came
right
a few years later and, you know, things kind of,
well, that's why I
got a lot better.
That's why I say Jonathan Quick may not be the best player in Kings history, but I think he may be the most important player in Kings history because sure, the season that we're talking about with Dan Cloutier also featured Matthew Garon, who like he had a career, it was fine. Barry Brust, who had a cup of coffee, Sean Burke, who was at the end of his career, and Yutaka Fukufuji, who right, nobody believes is a thing that happened.
Who had less than a half a cup of coffee.
Yeah. So, I mean, I know that they brought the argument was they're bringing in Cloutier to stabilize the goaltending position and to sort of like, you know, be a quote unquote professional goalie to a franchise that was struggling to nail that position down. But like Fizé, Storr, LaBarbera, Garon, like they were all right. They weren't, I mean, Dan Cloutier was, anyway, I never liked Dan Cloutier.
So you're saying you would take Jason LaBarbera over Dan Cloutier?
Well, so this is the real issue, and that is
you didn't answer the question.
Well, I will in a second.
You'll answer it with another question.
Well, the real issue is, what are you trying to accomplish with the trade?
Yeah.
And if you're tanking and you're like, for example, if you say, well, was Jake Muzzin for, you know, pieces a good trade? It's a great trade if you acknowledge that what the team is trying to do is acquire assets. It's a terrible trade if you say they, you know, thought Tobias Bjornfoot would help them win the Stanley Cup the following year. So the Dan Cloutier one, to me, I personally believe that Dean Lombardi was trying to hustle the organization into tanking for 2 or 3 years. And I think bringing in Hanzus and Ponikarovsky and Nagy and Pricing and Calder and all those guys.
Cliff Ronning.
Under the guise of like, no, we're actually trying to win. I was like, right. Okay. Sure you were. So
I remember those days. Yeah. Those were lean years,
but I don't like Dan Cloutier. So
got it.
As a human being, I'm sure he's a lovely human being. The second worst trade on their list is another one that I disagree with, that I would not include were I the one making the list. And I have this fight a lot with Kings fans. And that's Andre Sekharov for the Carolina Hurricanes for a first round pick and Roland McCown. Any thoughts on that trade?
What I recall about Sekharov was he didn't stand out, at least not in a good way. He didn't live up to the billing. And wasn't he also hurt, if I remember it correctly? Didn't he also suffer some kind of injury, which was quite the setback, which
led
him to not be as effective as he might have been otherwise?
And then he left in free agency.
Right. Yeah, right.
So the sort of common look at this trade is, well, you traded a first round pick in an era where you had been hemorrhaging first round picks, trying to win, you know, the cup as many times as possible. And you traded it for a guy who wasn't any good. They missed the playoffs and then he left. But this is where I go back to, what were they trying to do? And they were trying to make the playoffs in a season immediately following a cup win, where they had lost Willie Mitchell to free agency, Slava Voynov to, you know, self-deportation. And I don't remember else what the rest of the blue line looked like at the time, but they were not, I think they wound up missing the playoffs by a single point that season. Like, I think Calgary just wound up edging them out. And I remember I sort of jokingly had a theory that the rest of the league was conspiring to keep the Kings out of the playoffs. Because every time Calgary would play a team that would hurt the Kings' playoff chances, they'd win. And every time it didn't matter, they'd lose. And
I remember that.
It's just like so frustrating.
Yes.
So anyway, the point is they needed to do something, right? They had lost their second pair completely. The year previous, when they win the cup in 2014, you've got Muzzin and Doughty, Voynov and Mitchell, and Green and Martinez. And I think maybe even Green was gone at that point. So, I mean, I think or if he wasn't gone, he was diminished. So they needed to do something. They're trying to make the playoffs in the season following their second cup win in 3 years. So
not easy.
I'll excuse them for taking a swing at it, right? Like, you know, we don't look back, you know, if they hadn't won the Stanley Cup in 2012, the Jeff Carter trade is Jack Johnson and a first round pick, but they won. So it's great. So yeah. I'm just not going to judge them. And the fact that he left in free agency, the team was already right. That was the year that they should have bought out Mike Richards and they maybe should have used a different buyout that they had. They made a bunch of mistakes in the offseason. They probably shouldn't have signed Marian Gaberick to the contract they did. So yeah, Sekera left because he didn't have, right? They didn't have the cap space to bring him back. And he's gone on and had like a pretty decent career. He is the player. He has proven that he was the player that they thought they were trading for. Subsequently, he just has health problems and whatever. So did Mitchell. So did Scuderi. So did Justin Williams, excuse me. So did Marian Gaberick. Like they've dined out on a bunch of dudes with sketchy injury pass, and it wasn't held against them.
Well, they also had to replenish, and there aren't a whole lot of choices or picks to players to choose from,
right,
who are available in a trade. So you're picking from a crop that is not really,
yeah,
it's not like it's free agency. You go, oh, we got all these guys we can choose from. Which one are we going to go after? There's only so many guys who are available or who are made available through trade. And he was at the time, he was a fairly decent player.
In 2013-14, he had 44 points and 11 goals in 74 games. And up to the point that they traded for him in 2015, he had 19 points in 57 games. So, yeah, like he was a good player.
Yeah, he's no stiff. Yeah.
No, and he had 4 points and was a plus 4 in 16 games with the Kings. Like, he was fine. It didn't work out. And like I said, they missed the playoffs by 1 point because the league was conspiring to keep the Kings out of the playoffs. What are you gonna do? Now, this is the really unpopular move. I'm going to replace that trade on the list.
Yep.
And I've had this fight a number of times with a very small group of people.
Does it involve Craig Johnson?
No. Oh. No. It's the Dustin Penner trade.
Okay.
I think the Dustin Penner trade was a bad trade.
Why?
I think it worked out, right? Because they win the Stanley Cup in 2012.
And he scored a big goal in Arizona.
And he has that big goal in Arizona.
Yep.
But here's why. It's Dustin Penner for Colton Tubert, a first-round pick, and a conditional third-round pick that might have become a second if they had won the Stanley Cup in 2011. But they didn't. And here's why I think it's a bad trade. With no Anze Kopitar in the playoffs in 2011, just a few months after they acquired Dustin Penner for a boatload of stuff, mm-hmm, he has 2 points in that playoffs against Vancouver in 2000, sorry, not against Vancouver, against San Jose, in 2011. You know who else played for the Kings in that playoff series against the San Jose Sharks?
I don't.
That had more points than, I was looking at the wrong screen there. Hold on. So that was the season that Kyle Clifford, Wayne Simmonds, and Brad Richardson had that incredible playoffs, right? Like they were great. That was their big coming out party. Yeah. Dustin Penner had 2 points. Kyle Clifford had, this is it. Sorry, even so, never mind, even strength, all strengths. Kyle Clifford had 5 points. Brad Richardson had 5 points. Ryan Smith had 5 points. Trevor Lewis had 4 points. Justin Williams had 4 points. Jarrett Stoll had 3. Wayne Simmonds had 3. Michael Hontzius had 2. Kevin Westgarth had 2 points in that playoff series. That's the same as Dustin Penner. Dustin Penner was fine. Like, I'm not going to say he was a bad player. I'm not going to say he hurt the team. But for what they gave up for him, he was totally ineffective in the regular season. He did, right, disappeared for stretches at a time. And he had one good shift in the Arizona series as far as scoring goals. I don't mean he had one good shift. I mean, he had one memorable shift.
Yeah.
But like in the regular season, the fastest he ever skated was when his shift was over and he was heading to the bench. Like, the dude. And then he was essentially out of the league after that, right? Like, he bumped around to a few places, but he was basically done.
But
nothing.
No, but also keep in mind, and if you knew Dustin Penner then, he was one of those guys that guys liked, and that was jovial and fun to be around, and a good guy, and you need guys like that. You do need guys like that. So it's not always about, hey, he didn't produce on the ice, so that trade didn't work out. It's also, hey, let's get guys together and let's bond and let's be more of a team. And let's, you know, I'm kind of the glue in this whole thing. So then when he does score a huge goal against Arizona, you go, yes, okay, Oza paid off.
That's fine. But they gave up Colton Tubert, who was himself a massive disappointment. And so whatever, but he was still a 13th overall pick. And it was 3 years after drafting him.
Yeah.
And he had been, you know, like I said, a little bit disappointing, but he was having himself a career and a first round pick and a third round pick for a guy that, like I said, it's not so much that I regret them acquiring Dustin Penner, because like we said about the Mike Richards trade, I'm not taking that trade back and giving up the cup in 2012, right? Like, I wouldn't wouldn't do that. It worked out. I just don't think he was anywhere near worth what they gave up for him. And then when you flash forward to the Sekera trade and you go, well, how come they had to trade a first round pick for a dude? And you look back and you go, it's because they gave up a first round pick, a defenseman who was a 13th overall pick in the first round a few years before, and a 2012 condition. It's because they kept making these deals like the Dustin Penner one that depleted the prospect pool. And like I said, it netted them the two Stanley Cup wins. So I wouldn't undo it.
So it's basically Dustin Penner for a first round pick.
For two, well, for two first. I mean,
but Colton Tubert didn't pan out.
For a first, a third, and Colton Tubert, who at the time was, I don't know. I suppose you could argue at that point that they realized he wasn't worth anything. But even if you remove Colton Tubert from the trade, it's still a first and a third for a guy who didn't produce anywhere near on the level that, say, for example, Jeff Carter did, who was also traded for a first round pick.
Yet still contributed in a huge way with that goal and played a heck of a playoff series.
Yeah, but this is why I use that.
And do
metaphor.
They win the cup without him?
I would say yes, personally.
Yeah, I would disagree with that. That part well, I would disagree with.
That, I mean, we'll never know. But the the Dustin Penner trade to me is, like I said earlier, if you and I left your house and we decided we were going to go eat at McDonald's and we got the directions wrong and we wound up, you know, at blanking on the name of the place that you and I had dinner with, the spherical ice cube that I like.
Oh, yeah. Me too. It's a number.
But anyway, if we wound up there instead of McDonald's, like, it all worked out, and that's great. But
we had a great
meal.
Yeah.
It's still not what the plan was. It's
gotcha.
Still not what we're.
Yeah.
Understood. Anyway, that brings us to the undisputed worst trade on this list. And as I said on Twitter, I think it might be the worst trade, or it's certainly in contention for the worst trade in franchise history. And it's almost two bad trades wrapped into one, if not three bad trades wrapped into one. And I want to be clear, when I say I think it's in contention for the worst trade in franchise history, I'm not being hyperbolic or flippant. Like, I've actually written about 13 articles on what I consider the worst moves in franchise history. I've spent a lot of time, Dave, digging through and looking at what I thought were the worst trades in franchise history. And I legitimately think
this is it.
Well, it might be. There were a bunch where, like, you know, they could have had Ray Bourque, you know, and but it was a draft pick. It wasn't the player. Or, you know, they acquired Martin and he wound up playing like four games. And then it turned out he had some terrible injury that everybody knew about. And the GM was even called on it at a press conference. And he said, like, no, they're not screwing me over. Like, what are you talking about? And of course they were absolutely screwing him over. And I'm blanking on, I think they might've had an opportunity to get Guy Lafleur, someone like that. But again, it was always draft picks, right? Like, they were always trading first round draft picks to Montreal. But this one, geez Louise, Dave, it's bad. It's real bad.
I want to hear how bad it is.
Well, it's Milan. It's 1 year of 50% of Milan Lucic's contract from the Boston Bruins for a first round pick, Martin Jones and Colin Miller. So let's just focus on Colin Miller.
Ooh.
Like the least sort of important part of the trade, the sort of throwaway trade. Colin Miller, drafted in 2012. He's a fifth round pick. He's a right shooting defenseman and currently has had 301 games and 110 points as an NHL defenseman.
If I'm not mistaken, is he not from Santa Clarita also?
Sault Ste. Marie, as it turns out.
Then maybe not. Wrong guy.
Yeah, it turns out you are mistaken.
That's what I was thinking, is Sault Ste. Marie. Exactly right. Yeah.
But 6'1", right shooting defenseman,
yep,
taken in the fifth round. That's the kind of guy that you would love to have in your organization. And like I said, winds up playing, he's currently got over 300 games in the NHL.
So he's sticking around. He's making a name for himself.
Yeah. And that's
the right shot.
If you told me that the trade was Milan Lucic at 50% of his salary for Colin Miller, I understand it wouldn't go down at the time because Milan Lucic was a big deal and Colin Miller was not a name at the time. But in retrospect, that's probably what the trade should have been. Like, if you want value for value.
Yeah.
Right? Because Milan Lucic had a pretty decent season in LA, but then he left in free agency. Yep. They made the playoffs with him, but they got beat by the Sharks in five games. And Colin Miller's gone on to be like a really good support defenseman.
Sure. Yeah.
But that wasn't the trade.
There was more to it.
Yeah, it also included the first round pick. Now, I'm not going to get into who was taken with that first round pick because I don't think that's fair necessarily. But a first round pick for Milan Lucic at 50% of his salary for 1 year, in retrospect, I think that, again, might have been an acceptable trade in retrospect, looking back on it. Right?
Yeah.
I mean, mm-hmm. he was good that year, right? He was fun. He was fun to watch.
That year, yeah.
Yeah. Don't you think?
Yeah, but there's...
You sound hesitant.
No, that year he was good, but it's just hard knowing all what came after, what followed, and all the other... You mentioned there's three pieces involved in this. Well, four pieces involved in the trade, three that went for him. Yeah, when you look at that, it's hard to argue that there would be one that would be worse.
Now, I wasn't factoring in who was taken with that draft pick.
I wasn't going to ask you that.
Well, because I don't think it's necessarily fair, but...
Who was it, Jesse?
Well, it wound up being Jacob Zboril, which is, you know, whatever. But taken three spots later at 16th overall was Matthew Barzal. Ooh. And it has been rumored for years that that is who the Kings had their eyes on and who they would have liked to have taken with that draft pick.
He's
had
really
they not.
Good.
Yeah, he is.
He's fun to watch.
Yeah.
He can score goals.
Had they not made that trade, but they did make the trade.
He did. Yeah.
It was 13th overall. And even if they hadn't taken Matthew Barzal, there's also players like Kyle Connor, Evgeny Svechnikov, Joel Eriksson Ek, Colin White, Brock Besser, Travis Konechny. There's a bunch of guys taken
pretty good names on that list
after that spot. Yeah, that they could have had Sebastian Aho. Even a guy like Brandon Carlo would have been decent. And of course, Eric Chernak, who they wind up taking in the second round.
And Martin Jones was involved in that trade.
Well, that is really that's what really pushes it over the top. Because Martin Jones and a first traded for a guy when you could have traded Martin Jones for a first. And that's not like I'm not making that up. Boston acquired Martin Jones and then turned around and traded him for a first round pick. So they got two first round picks out of one deal. And that's why I say this is two bad trades in one, because not only was it a massive overpayment for a dude that was never going to sign right as a free agent, right? They got him at 50% of his salary. That's the only reason they could pull it off in the first place.
Yeah.
Not only that, but you cost yourself the opportunity to get whatever you could have gotten for Martin Jones, right? Because Martin Jones wasn't just traded for a first round pick. As I recall, it was Martin Jones for a first round pick and something else. I'm going to look it up right now. It's got too many tabs open on my laptop to try and manage all this. But if I'm not mistaken, it was Sean Corrali and a first round pick. And Sean Corrali's had himself a pretty decent little career.
Yeah.
Like he's on the same level as Colin Miller, as far as I'm concerned. So the Kings could have kept Colin Miller, kept their first round pick in 2015, and had the equivalent of another first round pick and Sean Corrali, all for the price of not having Milan Lucic on a team that had won the Stanley Cup two seasons prior without Milan Lucic.
I see where you're going with this. Yeah.
I hate this trade so much, Dave.
I can tell.
It's just an insanely bad trade.
I can hear it in your voice, Jesse. I can hear it.
And it was a bad trade in the moment. That's the word. Like the rest of them, whether I think they should be on the list or not, you know, like, we broke down some of them and I said, I understand why they're in there. But this one is just like in the moment, you're looking at it and you're going, the only justification is that San Jose might have offered Martin Jones an offer sheet, in which case the Kings would have gotten compensation if they didn't want to match it.
Right.
So this was, I don't know if this was just some sort of ego move or ego play or what, but it is, like I said, it's two bad trades, if not three bad trades in one. And I hate it so much.
It's still affecting them.
Yeah.
I mean,
and somebody asked if it makes it any better that Martin Jones you know, is sort of struggling with San Jose. And I said, it's the slimmest of silver linings because he was pretty good for them for a few seasons.
He was.
The fact he's very good for them. The fact that it's gone south for them recently is like, all right.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
I feel a little bit.
But even the other guys who were involved, the Colin Millers and the Sean Corrali.
Yeah.
I mean, you're talking about guys who are playing many, many games in the NHL who are probably going to be in the NHL for years to come. So
yeah,
look at the output they've had over the past couple of seasons and what they've done for their teams. It's been great.
Well, and it was super annoying when Colin Miller wound up in Vegas too. Right.
And now and he's right next door.
Yeah. Now you're playing against Braden McNabb and Colin Miller every right. game. And you're just like, right. Oh God, what are we going to
see him again? Yeah.
So anyway, that's the list. I thought it was fun that they posted it. And I wanted to talk to you, Dave, because you were here, whether it was as the PA announcer, whether running the Alumni Association, whether as a reporter for ESPN. You were wearing many hats during all those trades.
Many, many hats. It took a toll on my hair.
Yeah.
It was worth it. It was worth it, Jesse.
Yeah.
By the way, can I say that I like your beard?
Yeah, you can.
I guess it's a goatee. It's not a full beard. It's a goatee.
Well, I just shaved the beard part off and kept the goatee.
Oh, yeah. You did? It looks good, man.
Yeah, well, it's long, eh? It's a bit. People won't be able to see this, but I'm combing it now for Dave.
Yeah, no, I like it.
Yeah, it's, I don't know. I think I've told you this before, but when in my early 20s, it was so long that I could braid it a little bit.
Yeah, yeah.
And I worked at Babies R Us. That was a good look.
Yeah, it's rugged. Makes you look rugged.
I haven't been rugged in years.
Well, you're rugged now.
I used to be rugged, yeah.
You're rugged now. You're back to being rugged.
That's right, rugged, never leaving my house except for to buy groceries.
You know, one of these days we have to do a show on the things that go on in your house. And I know you probably don't want to share them now, but
I sure don't.
We really should do a show when you can look back on this and laugh about all the things that go on in your house, because it's quite entertaining.
Yeah. New chapter written yesterday, by the way. I'll fill you in.
Oh, I can't wait. This is going to be awesome. I'm telling you, if you're listening to this right now, which you are, otherwise you wouldn't know that I'm saying this.
That's right.
Jesse is living the life, A, and B, it would be hard to top any of the stories, real life stories, by the way, that Jesse has. I've been in stitches the times that Jesse has either called me or texted me with the stories. They are absolutely hysterical.
I always feel like you might think I'm making it up.
Well,
but I'm just not that creative.
No, I was going to say, if you made it up, I'd be like, there's no way. Like, yeah, this didn't happen. Yeah. But it's great.
And I try and send as much photographic evidence as possible.
I keep it coming. That's all I can say. I mean, stay safe, but keep it coming.
Hey, I'm just keeping my head. I'm just a man and trying to make his way in the universe, I think.
By the way, you have the glasses, but may I suggest that you change the glasses to maybe a swim goggle?
That is not going to happen. That is definitely not going to happen. Anyway, if you've enjoyed this episode and you want to hear me and Dave, wax poetic on things in the King's past, tweet both of us. We appreciate it. And hopefully, Dave, I mean, I don't know what's going to happen with the season, but hopefully I'll get to see you at Staples Center or some other venue sometime in the future.
Crossing our fingers, aren't we? I mean, yeah, who absolutely knows what's going to happen? You're right. It's up in the air. Could be indoor, could be outdoor.
Yep.
Could be somewhere in a bubble city. We don't know.
That's right.
But let's hope it's soon.
Well, if it's a bubble city, I'm not going.
It's been 9 months, damn it.
Oh, I know. It's insanity. I keep trying to tell, like, everybody's keep saying, you know, oh, there's going to be a season. Don't worry about it. There's going to be a season. And I just keep remembering back to 2004, 2005.
Yeah.
Every month we were just like, they're not going to cancel. They can't cancel the season. Yeah. This is not going to. They're gonna.
And then all of a sudden there was no season.
Yeah. And I remember it was like February. A friend of mine was getting married and we were all staying at, I think it was the Sheraton in downtown Long Beach. And it's like the rehearsal dinner. We're all heading back to the hotel and we're all walking into the hotel and I just see out of the corner of my eye, the hotel bar is playing ESPN. And it was like the day that Gretzky and Lemieux sort of flew in and you know, they were like, we're going to fix this. We're going to settle this. So I left the group. I went over to the hotel bar to figure it out. That was February of that year. And I remember thinking, okay, they can still do it. They can still have a season. It's fine. It's fine.
Well, we're approaching that time now. We're in mid-December.
December.
So,
well, everybody's saying now that training camp's going to open a few weeks after the new year. Players don't want to leave their family for the holidays, and so they'll have to quarantine starting January 1st or Boxing Day or whatever it is, and the training camps will open mid-January. That gives us a season starting in February and ending in July. So,
and then back to normal for the next season?
They got to. I mean, Seattle and a new TV deal. They got to.
Yeah.
But anyway.
Cross your fingers.
Yeah. Appreciate you joining me, Dave. And like
sure thing, Jesse. Thank you.
Kings fans, if you want to hear us do this again, send us a topic. We'll probably dive into it. Thanks for listening. We'll talk to you soon.